This is Radio 314 on the Red Ice Radio Network.
A married homeschooling father of three sons and one daughter, Justin spends his time lifting weights, arguing with manginas, and embracing his ever-growing role in the creation of a new generation of warriors. And that is precisely why I invited him to the program. How do we as parents raise warrior sons, and why is it important? Isn't it obvious how tyrants remain in control when men in a society remain passive and non-threatening? We'll also talk about how our liberal society rewards weakness, encourages victim mentality, and has lost sight of the ubermensch. Also, we talk about the idea of a noble king or leader and touch upon the healthy male-female balance. Justin Garcia, or Master Chim, coming up. Welcome, Justin. Thanks for being here.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me, Lana.
Well, I've recently discovered The Pressure Project, your podcast, and I've really been enjoying it, even though you discussed masculinity and guy stuff. And I know many women appreciate seeing that male fire returning in these liberal, pacified times. So it's great to meet you.
Oh, no, I appreciate it. I'm glad to be here with my torch reigniting it for you.
So tell us about your academy and also what inspired you to begin doing your radio show.
Well, I'm a former professional fighter. I have a mixed martial arts school here in New York City. And after I stopped fighting, I'm running out of ways to explore and cultivate my masculinity. And, you know, I don't have the punching a guy in the face every day type of training. So it was really in conversation and in teaching my students and looking sort of outside of my academy that I started going toward. And I just noticed, especially being in, you know, this liberal rectum of New York City, you know, it was pretty easy to get fed up with, you know, with just the state of affairs where men were concerned.
Well, from the time when you were a young boy to today, have you noticed a change in how men look and behave and their overall demeanor?
You know, I have, and I think it's probably compounded by the fact that I was raised by masculine men, you know, the men in my family, and I was very active in sports, and I would say manly sports, growing up. And now, being that I'm at the tail end of that, being that I have my own family now, it's really the first time in my life I really got to sort of look, you know, over the gate, you know, as to what exactly is out there, you know. So I'm seeing it more now than ever. But I would say also, in addition to that, that society in general is becoming less masculine.
Yeah, I wonder, how did men get to this place? I mean, what reshaped their ideas of being a man? I know you've kind of looked into some of these root problems.
Well, you know, it's on a lot of different fronts. I think men and supporters of masculinity in general have been giving up ground. And ironically, it's usually through those same vessels I guess the feminists, which, you know, I'd have to put it in a big, you know, position of, you know, why men are suffering this way nowadays. You know, it's really a sort of amount of respect that they enjoy because of the dynamic of men and women, and, you know, a gentleman being a gentleman to a lady. And it's allowed for conversations to occur at a frequency that has sort of strayed us away from reality. You know, it used to be about what worked. And that sort of feedback loop, you know, nipped all the other, you know, nonsense in the bud. But nowadays, because we are so detached from actually having to have a lifestyle and a society that truly functions in nature, you know, we're able to show just how spoiled we really are. And I think that's what's happening.
Well, I mean, I don't like seeing skinny jeans and these gender neutral shoes and these super tight little t-shirts with these scrawny little vegan bodies. You know, these guys, they're whining to the government for social justice and they can't even fix things around the house. You know, it just really repulses me. But from your perspective, what areas in a man's life do you see this feminization occurring?
You know, first and foremost, I'd say the conversation. You know, the manly conversation, you know, we jokingly call it the manversation on The Pressure Project on my podcast, but it's really a man's ability to sit down and have a conversation with another man who may totally disagree with everything he has to say, and have emotion not play such a vital role in its discourse. And by emotion, not necessarily that they're not experiencing emotion, but that they're so concerned with the emotions of others when stating their opinions. So right at the very, you know, the beginning, the ability to communicate as men, that's been sabotaged. And we see that in, you know, the political correctness of entertainment, of politics, of society in general. And, you know, I hate seeing the skinny jeans. I hate seeing, you know, everybody, you know, just forgetting that we're men and women and that's okay. And, you know, I hate that Legolas is the most popular character in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
You know, it's a whole slew of things.
Well, when you raise your boys, what do you tell them about what it is to think like a man or act like a man?
Well, I think it's important that that we embrace what has historically and traditionally worked for men. I got, you know, a couple of days ago, I happened to see this really cool video in support of hunting. And one of the things the gentleman was talking about, you know, rang pretty significant and hit home. He had said, you know, you have these vegans out there, these people who refuse to respect the value of, you know, what a hunter does and, you know, what a hunter's done in their past. But what they need to realize is that if they are a vegan and they are here these days to complain about, you know, all of the aspects of hunting, understand they're only here because there was a strong man with a killing mechanism ready to kill an animal somewhere in their lineage, somewhere in their past. So when it comes to, you know, teaching my boys, and I have three sons now, soon, you know, my wife and I are about to have our first daughter. It's important that we connect with what was masculine in the past and not try and reinvent the wheel. You know, there is a successful formula laid out for us in the history of anybody's people. And I think that's where we need to look first.
And it's also good to be reminded that healthy levels of testosterone have built civilizations and have protected women and children. And exactly, that's one of the reasons why we're here today.
100%. Couldn't agree more.
So as a father, what do you think of these anti-bullying laws?
Well, you know what? I'm against bullying also. But my take on being against bullying is making sure that we don't make, you know, weak children. You know, I hear about the bullying laws in schools. I hear about the hate crime laws that preceded them. And it's all based in weakness. It's all based in a victim's mentality. It's all a sort of willingness to identify with somebody who needs the world to become less of a dangerous place for them. And it's just not natural. It's not what has led us to here at this point in time. A phrase I like to use is it's easier to fix a boat than it is to calm a sea. Mm-hmm. So if you do have a child who is getting bullied and picked on and, you know, made fun of amongst his or her peers, they need to be tougher because one of the great things about childhood is that we get to experience so many obstacles and so many things at that stage in life that don't bear the consequences that they soon will as adults. And when we forget that childhood is little more than a preparation for that, you know, rest of your life, you know, the more we forget that, the more dire circumstances are going to occur by our own design.
That's right. And as you've said, our society likes to reward weakness. And it seems like our current culture just celebrates mediocrity and just sabotages anyone that does have some kind of greatness or ambition and real talent because it's not fair, and we have to be good little egalitarian slaves now. So, in your view, how is our society rewarding weakness?
Well, you know what? It's funny. Here in New York City, I grew up in predominantly, you know, middle to lower socioeconomic neighborhoods, and you know, I know people whose families are now third, fourth generation of living in the projects, you know, housing projects, and you know, it's something that was unfathomable when those housing projects were first created, because like the projects, using them as a representation for, you know, that sort of welfare state mentality and policy, you know, the intentions were always pure. The intentions were always good on the surface. At least that was what was communicated. But at a certain point, you know, we just forget the systems of checks and balances that sort of keeps what we're doing, you know, in touch with reality. And, you know, rewarding weakness is really just allowing people to avoid any sorts of pressure. You know, on my podcast, we say pressure to power is the formula. And without that pressure, there could be no power. So if you look at any other application of that concept, whether it be sports, whether it be getting in shape, you know, whether it be war, it's the more you're able to endure, the more you're able to take on, the more you're able to have. You know, you reap what you sow. You know, these concepts are as old as we are.
Yeah.
You know, but for some reason we get lost in the shuffle of feeling good and avoiding the icky feelings and, you know, making sure we don't offend anybody because we want everybody to be fair and equal. And, you know, it's not the way it has ever been, because I'll say, along with dulling, you know, those people who would otherwise achieve greatness as they have, you know, historically in the history of man, we also disallow the idiot from doing what has always been the idiot's job, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, it's another point that's never brought up. It's like sometimes people aren't smart enough to go to college. This generation or this, you know, these last few generations are starting to ignore that for some reason. But the phrase that I remember I used to hear from the, you know, quote unquote old timers as I was growing up was, you know, the world needs ditch diggers too.
That's right.
You know? And everybody sort of found their role. And when those roles were mixed up, you know, according to their identities, that's when, you know, we started to see these imbalances and just these social disparities, and everybody's lost now. You know, society at large, especially a place like New York, you know, everybody just seems lost, out of touch with what works.
Yeah, and I noticed too, these multicultural societies have become this kind of hierarchy of victims. And if your victimhood is more severe than someone else's, you'll basically get stuff. And now it's because of some mythical white privilege that is the real problem. And society will mock those who say, no, it's hard work and perseverance is the way. It seems like we now side with the loser, the gangster, and the underdog. So what happened to the Ubermensch, right?
Right. You know, it's funny. I have a very good friend of mine, Tuan Tom Kyer, who I've had on my podcast a slew of times, and very, you know, one of my most well-respected friends. He had a great take on white privilege. He said, yeah, we have white privilege. We worked hard for that privilege. And, you know, why don't you want to work as hard to get your own privilege? And it's something that slaps people in the face, oftentimes, but couldn't be further, or couldn't be more true. Now, you know, when you talk about, you know, Nietzsche's, you know, Ubermensch, the concept of this, you know, master morality and somebody who doesn't really associate or care about, you know, those lesser quality individuals, it's something that if we look back and apply, you know, that formula or that filter to great men in our history, men being, you know, the general men or women, society, it's where we made our strides. It's where we made our gains. It's how we've progressed. It's been by these individuals who weren't worried about the people who were around them and scared. You know, this whole mindset of I'm going to equate my value and existence solely as a reflection of another individual is the mindset of a slave. It's the mindset of somebody who is weak.
Mm-hmm.
And it's somebody who wants the world to not be so dangerous. And somehow thinking if they were to succeed, that would represent being strong. And again, it's just a detachment from reality.
That's right. Yeah. Tell us why you took a profound interest in Ubermensch to begin with.
Well, you know, it's funny. There's so many concepts. I like to tell people that, you know, I often find myself liking individuals totally exclusively of whether or not they like me also. And I respect things that are strong. I respect things that are consistent. I respect things that make sense. And, you know, when you find these little hinges that swing these big doors, you know, you'd be a fool to ignore them. And, you know, when I look at, you know, some of Nietzsche's studies, which historically, you know, we can get into how Nietzsche has been misunderstood, misrepresented, and whatnot, and in terms of so many other issues like race relations and the like. You know, I think when we look at it for its absolute value, we see nothing more than a champion of strength, a champion of personal accountability, and a champion for reaching that next level of existence. You know, for me, that's what I've always strived to do as an adult, whether it be fighting, starting my business, starting my family. I always, you know, tell my students at the academy, you know, I need to compete in whatever it is that I do, because it's how I know that I'm still pushing myself.
Mm-hmm.
And too many times people, you know, even if they're the best in the room, they allow themselves to settle for that. And I've always said, you should be the one pressuring yourself more than anybody else could possibly pressure you, you know?
Well, I heard you talking about leadership amongst men, and I really like the idea of the noble king, or the man best fit to rule and lead. Do you think we'll ever see a return of a noble, benevolent type of leader?
You know, I think it's culture first. It's really, you know, what are we doing as a collective group, as a tribe, to put forth back on a pedestal those virtues that would eventually lead to that benevolent nobility and leadership. And I think, you know, will it happen again in the future? I don't know. We have Jack Donovan's podcast called Start the World. Start the World, you know, doesn't mean waking up in the morning with, you know, a nice, you know, hot cup of coffee. It's really, you know, there's going to be a revolution. There's going to be a change. We're going to reach in society a breaking point where there's just going to be no recourse other than rejecting, you know, what it is that, you know, that we're trapped in. It's only then, when we have these cultural shifts, that we'll be able to support, you know, those virtues being put back on the pedestal where they should be.
Yeah, I'd say too that probably Western culture and our government in particular is way out of whack and just a crazy mess due to good men not taking any action and rooting out the problem, such as, I'd say, my parents' generation, the baby boomers, who were not vigilant, but instead they were in the hippy-dippy, all is love land, you know what I mean?
Right, and I think it's a reality and a lifestyle that was sort of paid for by the generation before them. And, you know, because they're still sort of reaping what generations prior to them have sown, you know, we're not yet at the point where, you know, we have to sort of put up or shut up as individuals. You know, I always tell my guys, and I bring it up on the podcast often, you know, there's no way that, you know, we're going to be able to, or I should say, there's no way that we can have all of the weak sort of egalitarian-minded individuals in America, for example, that we do today, if America wasn't so strong, it wasn't, you know, sort of paid for in its power by so many generations before us. You know, the fact that somebody could stand, you know, in a supermarket today with a picture of a dead chicken saying, you know, that we're murdering, you know, farm animals, you know, that's, you know, as much as we don't want to admit it, that's a testament to how strong we've become,
mm-hmm.
that we even allow these people to exist.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, and it also seems kind of obvious to me, I don't know, conspiracy, if you will, it seems like a certain sect of society is kind of encouraging men to be non-threatening, and so they need more men who are more pushovers so that these elite group can easily control the cultural and political narrative and get away with murder. Do you know what I mean?
No, absolutely. And you see that with the diversity narrative, you know, the whole, you know, remember, you know, we're diverse, diversity is good, multiculturalism is good. But by the way, we're all one, you know, which is a totally contradictory notion. And it used to be, you know, in society's past, you know, it didn't matter what our opinions were of other cultures, because a lot of times we never saw them. We never had to interact with them. They were allowed to exist autonomously because just of the state of the world at those times. You know, now as we're entering, or I should say entering maybe the next phase of the technological age, the computer age, now we do have as small a world as we've ever had in history. And now the move, it only makes sense that those in power are going to do what's necessary to leverage their power in an increasing fashion. And, you know, it's one of the things that when you look at taking some of the minority groups and selling them on the notion that, you know, let's to take the blacks of America, you know, that somehow slavery is still affecting you this day. Yeah, if I'm the guy that's sitting, you know, the fat cat on the top of the hill, that's what I want the black people thinking. That's what I want them feeling. That's what I want them distracted by. And that's the conversation that I want society to be having, because nobody's ever going to sort of look at the top of the mountain. No one's going to look behind the curtain and see who's actually benefiting from all this triviality that, that all of us are consumed by, whether it's these useless conversations of race relations and racism, or it's, you know, the latest, you know, talk show or celebrity, you know, drama. You know, there's just so much to be distracted by these days. And, you know, it takes a keen mind, unfortunately, to sort of look past that and actually sort of stake their awareness in something significant.
Yeah, I think there has been a select group of elite men in charge who they don't fight with fist to fist, not that kind of masculinity, but rather through manipulation, law, and various proxies. So would you consider these men still to be masculine men?
You know, I don't. And the reason I say that is, you know, if you are so if you reach a level of sophistication in a society where you no longer still espouse nor show and benefit from those virtues that have led men to be masculine throughout the history of man, then I cannot call you masculine. If you are the person who I'm thinking of, if you've ever seen the movie The Last Samurai, they had the emperor who was a young boy, and the difference between, you know, he and the last samurai of who Tom Cruise was in camp with the majority of the movie. You see the disparity between this young boy who's had nothing but privilege granted to him his entire life, and the masculinity of the samurai class of these warriors. And, you know, it speaks to, you know, I would say the difference between men nowadays who embrace these notions of political correctness and embrace these notions of commercialism and business over family, business over tribe, money over, you know, the social bonds of friends and family and, you know, the bonds of men. You know, the people that do those things and put forth those as virtues that they embrace, I'd say is a direct move away from masculinity. Because, like I said earlier, you know, masculinity is a formula that's as old as we are. You know, and the information's out there, and any attempt to reinvent the wheel is usually a little more than an acknowledgement of one's inability to actually perform the formula as it's been designed.
I know the word masculinity has really been demonized, and some women will just see some kind of no-neck guy driving a Camaro, you know. So when you say masculinity, right, what are we really conveying here?
You know, somebody who's masculine is somebody who warrants the respect of other men, first and foremost. It's somebody who embraces the role, the traditional role, I would say, of being relied upon to perform what have always been the masculine responsibilities and duties, you know, of tribes, of people in general. It's, you know, the warrior class. It's the provider. It's the brother in arms. It's the person who is willing to sacrifice himself often for the good of the tribe, and understanding the need that they create the buffer and insulation for generations to, you know, to be formed, you know, within the tribe. You know, so I have my own notion of what tribe is. And one of the big components is you have warriors and you have nurturers. And, you know, the men traditionally have identified with the warrior class. So, you know, when I look at a man today, you know, how do we apply those things to, you know, what's a masculine man today? It's the man who does understand that he needs to provide for his family. It's a man that understands that he needs to have friendships and networks with other men. Whenever I see these husband and wife pairs who, you know, live in the city or around all these other people, but, you know, they want to somehow just stay amongst themselves, the man, you know, the husband not having friendships with any other men, the wife not having friendships with any other women. It's really something that's unnatural. It's something that, you know, nowhere else in society has ever even been possible. And again, it's a condition that we, you know, we're able to enjoy, you know, if that's what you want to call it, or at least experience solely because of our detachment from reality. I think, you know, when we have the all the, you know, shit hits the fan scenarios play out, you know, you need only look at the popularity of, you know, a show like The Walking Dead and how much people embrace the notion of, you know, men being men and women being strong. And those roles sort of playing themselves out and seeing it as a positive, you know. So if there is a masculine man, there's also a feminine woman, and you know they've really been two sides of a coin throughout history that have allowed us to survive as a species.
Exactly, I agree 100%. And you know, guys always write, well, you know, how do I attract women? I always say confidence is the number one thing. Confidence and strength above all, above all else, hands down.
Absolutely. I used to do sales training and speak publicly. And there was a point in my presentation where I would put up a picture of my wife and I. And I would say, if this isn't a testament to my confidence as a salesman, I don't know what is.
Good looking lady.
I got a good looking lady. And it's exactly what has always been sort of very congruent with what's been successful for men. You know, the notion of confidence in the face of adversity, maybe not always doing the safest thing, but the thing that allowed us to experience the most success, not only as an individual, but as a group, as a tribe, you know. And these days where, you know, we're running away from that. I know the popularity of TV shows. I've spoken about this before in my podcast. You know, you have a show like Friends, you know, super popular. I can't say I didn't enjoy it myself at one point in history. But what do you see if not a group of men and women who have absolutely no differences in their identities where their genders are concerned?
Yeah.
You know, the men and women are basically, you could have swapped out actors and actresses and it would have had little to no effect on any of the, you know, the aspects of the story. So as maybe, you know, witty and quippy the writing of that show, you know, is, I think another use is to look at it for what it is really a, you know, a sales pitch for this sort of middle ground between the genders, you know, losing the dichotomy that we've achieved so much success for throughout history, and saying, yeah, men, women, you know, what's the difference? You know, I usually argue with feminists. One of the big things is, you know, the whole, if I want to go out and get a job and have a career, you know, I should be able to do that. I shouldn't have to stay home with a child, you know. And I say, well, that's fine if you don't want to have children, you know. But, you know, to say somehow that my wife, who is a stay-at-home mom, full-time homemaker, you know, to say that somehow her job is less significant than mine, yeah. You know, when she's watching the four people on this planet who I care about the most, like, I just don't understand that. I don't relate to it. And it's really, you know, the notion that somehow that should be looked down upon is just something I can't identify with.
I mean, you're bringing in life, for crying out loud. What's bigger and better than that?
You know, it is kind of important.
And furthermore, you know, women have the breast. They need to be with the baby, feeding the baby. That's how it's always been. It's biological, and there's nothing wrong with that.
And that's one of the, like, people always say, well, you know, who's, you know, are men and women equal? You know, it's a question I often pose to people. And, you know, they're usually, you know, twiddling their thumbs trying to figure out an answer. And you usually get the follow-up from them of, you know, asking me in return, well, in what way? And I say, exactly, you know, if we talk about, you know, nurturing, you know, a newborn, you know, women by far, you know, just dwarf men in their ability to do that successfully. But when you talk about, you know, physically fighting, you know, violently in a war, it's the opposite, you know. And to ignore those differences is to ignore who we are, what our identities are. And, you know, you get this, you know, this narrative that's written by other people, written by people who benefit, you know, from losing the, you know, the dichotomy of genders. And, you know, and they're the ones who are selling people on a notion that men shouldn't be masculine, that women shouldn't be feminine. that it's a social construct. You have nowadays that, you know, one of the things I'm doing for my podcast and letting the cat out the bag somewhat is we're going to do this experiment. One of the things is I'm going to go into, and I look like, you know, freaking Gimli from Lord of the Rings, you know, I'm going to go into a bunch of restaurants and businesses in New York City and walk into the women's bathrooms. And it's going to be recorded, and not inside the bathroom, but me going in. And I'm going to try and strum up as much opposition as I can. And I'm simply going to state, well, I identify as a woman. And that's all I'm going to say. I identify as a woman. That's all I'm going to. And I want to see what exactly happens. It's a little social experiment we're planning. But the fact that I think, I truly think that I'm going to have some success, you know, being supported in using women's bathrooms while I'm doing this, just proves how absolutely insane our society is today.
I agree completely. Oh, God. Well, you can identify with something physically, but or mentally, but you still have a penis, so biologically, it's not going to
work. Whether I like it or not. Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah, there is this beautiful symbiotic balance between the masculine and feminine principles, and it is the ultimate powerful union, and you really just have to experience it to understand, because you could talk about it forever, but if people haven't really experienced that, they're not going to understand how a woman or a man can actually empower you and make you better and make you complete, because there's a lot of people that just have really unhealthy relationships out there. So how did our relationships get so messed up in your view?
You know, I think men are responsible for a lot of it. I think when you see the way certain men treat, you know, the positions of feminism and these positions of, you know, promoting this one gender, you know, worldview, it's really on them. So, you know, like I'm the one who I am a complete gentleman to a lady, but you know, some of these women who, you know, we get into conversations with nowadays, I wouldn't consider as such. So I don't act accordingly. And when I have a feminist, be it a man or a woman, trying to sell me on the notion that, you know, it is wrong for a woman to stay at home with her children. It is wrong for a man to feel that he should provide for his family. You know, I'm always going to disagree, and I'm going to disagree adamantly, and I'm going to allow, and this is alluding to the first thing I brought up, I'm going to allow for that conversation to occur organically and to occur consistently. And the minute that I sort of curtail my positioning, my ability to have that conversation just for the sake of allowing people to be comfortable, i.e. avoiding offending people, well, then I'm responsible for part of that type of mindset's actual existence, you know. So I blame men to a great extent, which is probably one of the prime motivators for my podcast.
Yeah, and people have to remember too when they talk about the feminist movement and well, Lana, they couldn't vote, you know. So well, they used to vote as one household because man and woman used to be united. Now, I mean, that's horrible. Can you imagine being with someone where politically you would want to vote different than them? I mean, that wouldn't work for me.
I bring that up. It's so funny you bring that up. It's funny how we agree on so much. It's, you know, I'm waiting for the thing where I'm like, eh, you know, but so far we're going 100. It's, you know, I have these conversations with people all the time and they say, you know, how can you condemn feminism? There was a time where women couldn't vote. And I bring up the English practice. I forget the name of the practice, it eludes me right now, but it was basically a means by which a single woman, an unmarried, an unwed woman, was permitted to, allowed to own property and vote, you know, on matters of policy and legislation. But as soon as she became married, she was now sort of brought into the unity of that household, and that household got one vote. And because the man was usually the one to espouse the position of the home and the household, that was often leveraged and sort of deciphered as, you know, him being the one with the vote. But it was always, you know, a household should, you know, be on the same page, you know, with things that are as significant as voting issues, mm-hmm. and such, oh, yeah. You know, and so So I don't understand even, you know, like if you are in a marriage where the husband and wife are voting differently politically on so many things, you know, of significance, so many topics of significance, it's like, what is the purpose of your marriage? What are you doing?
I know.
You know, why are you guys married?
Yep, I agree. The other thing I hear feminists talk about is, well, you know, then we got birth control pills and we can have abortion. I'm like, both of those things are horrible for women's bodies. You know, it's like anti-female, I mean, on the deepest level.
Yeah. And, you know, for me, I've always, you know, on one hand, I say, look, I'm not going to tell a woman, you know, what, you know, legally she has to do with her body. I, you know, I'm very libertarian where that's concerned.
Sure. Yeah,
but
me too.
But I'll always follow it up by, you know, asking, you know, well, but what is it that you're doing? You know, why is this the best option for you? And, you know, is this something that's going to make you, your family, and eventually society stronger or weaker? And it's the conversation, again, that I always want to have.
Yeah, and it's like before when we were in touch with our pagan roots, women were more in touch with the earth. They knew about their fertility cycles and when they could get pregnant, when they should not have sex. These things were out of touch with. So again, it's that earth connection is gone and it's creating all kinds of problems.
Right. And, you know, speaking of paganism and this sort of, you know, multi-theism and multi-theistic, you know, worldview, one of the things that it always maintained politically was the lack of a central power, the lack of a central narrative, and really the control that follows that. So I think, you know, when you look at, you know, pagan societies, you know, you do have this relationship with the earth and the relationship with the cycle of life and family. And I would argue one of the chief, you know, reasons for that is it's because it's what works. It's what is important. And it's really not being in denial of, you know, of what's natural to us.
That's right. I also like the Viking shield maidens because they would understand the power of, you know, their sensuality and their intuition and their beauty. But they also had this warrior within her. But she wasn't weak or helpless because being delicate and soft does not mean weak. And that's what a lot of these feminists think when you say what is feminine. We're not talking about some weak little frail, you know, hurt bunny in the corner here. There's actually a power and a strength in being delicate and soft.
Right. You know, and, you know, another saying that I have or a metaphor that I use is, you know, if, you know, we're in a village and the intruders are at the gate, traditionally the men have always run to meet the intruders. The women have always traditionally run to protect the children. But nowadays we have this third group that sits there and complains that it's all unfair.
You know? Oh yeah.
You know, so, you know, strength, absolutely. It's really, you know, it's, you know, strength to me isn't a woman having a manly body. It isn't a woman doing manly things. It's a woman embracing, with a master mindset, you know, those feminine virtues that have served women well since the beginning of time.
Well said. Well, I haven't seen it yet, but there's this piece of crap movie called 50 Shades of Grey based on some book here. And all I know is it's about a woman who's being bound and gagged. It's basically some S&M movie and she's really loving it. And it's been so popular that, you know, media has been calling it mommy porn. And it's like, it's weird because all these women now identify as feminists, but then they turn around. They must have this weird imbalance because then they're secretly wanting a man to be forceful with them and dreaming of S&M. Like, it's really,
you know, and it's
up.
Funny, you know, for a man to say that, because I agree completely, and for a man to say that, you know, we're so easily dismissed as being chauvinistic and not knowing what we're talking about, but it's refreshing hearing you say the same thing. You know, why is it that, you know, women love the bad boy? Why is it that women in this society, they sort of recruit and enlist these little, you know, weak, you know, worker bees, you know, as husbands that have no masculine traits. But then you look at our divorce rate and you realize that somehow, you know, the formula isn't working. And I think a lot of it has to do with, just like you said, this sort of psychological imbalance with what feels right and what sort of fits in society, because they're no longer the same thing.
Well, it's like in Scandinavia, the women up there, the feminists have basically deballed the men, and now they resent them for being weak and non-threatening. It's just right. Like, what do you want?
You know, I remember why my co-host on the Pressure Project was telling me about in I don't know if it was the Swedish embassy here in the U.S. It may be one of the Scandinavian countries. Their embassy here in the U.S. was altering their bathrooms so that, you know, you were not allowed to stand up and pee, and they were no longer using urinals. Because they were, you know, too old, hyper masculine, and you know, it's like insane. Holy shit, what is happening?
Yeah,
you know, the phrase that I use all the time jokingly is, you know, people ask me, you know, what are we supposed to do, and I say nothing, and they say why, and I say because my sons will be kings because of this.
Yeah, exactly. They'll run circles around all these weaklings, no problem. Yeah, well, I also wanted to talk about brotherhood. I mean, for me, when it comes to women today, I see sisterhood is so contorted and pretty much non-existent, because I think a lot of it has to come from materialism and loss of any kind of roots or folk consciousness or loyalty. Do you think brotherhood is undervalued in these days?
I think it's undervalued because there's less value achieved from it. There's less value achieved from it in terms of what gets you ahead in society, in society's view these days. I think, you know, having a bond between men, having a bond that allows us the synergy that we've always experienced that came with being surrounded by brothers, you know, it's not something that's supported and subsidized and rewarded, you know, through society these days. And, you know, it's something that, if anything, is condemned and chastised and, you know, really looked down upon and shunned, you know, by society in general. You know, I think that, you know, like one of the conversations that I always have with listeners of my podcast, they're always asking, you know, well, what should I do to, you know, if I want to be more of a man and I want to, you know, reclaim my masculinity, you know, what do you suggest that I do? And the first thing is that, you know, I ask them, well, who are your brothers? You know, who are the group of men that, you know, that you're able to sort of, you know, strengthen, you know, your masculinity with? And, you know, that has always been the element of a tribe that allowed men to be strong. You know, the phrase steel sharpens steel is a direct, you know, commentary on how when one is strong, the other is strong, they're both stronger than they ever could have been individually. You know, in brotherhood, you see that element present, you know, consistently.
Now, what do you think about football, baseball, those kinds of sports versus the fighting sports?
Well, I've played just about every sport there is. You know, I was a very, very athletic young man, and I played football a year in college as well. And the thing with sports in general is that they are a good thing. They're a good thing to do. But it needs to be understood that they're nothing more than a way for us to sort of deal with our masculine instincts and the concepts of teamwork and competition and aggression. You know, these are things that are otherwise put down in our society, but in sports, they're still allowed, you know, to be promoted. I would say the fighting arts are so much more masculine nowadays, just because that aspect of sports in general is so much more easily understood in fighting arts than they are in some of these other sports. And, you know, when you look at the, you know, it's funny, my wife's Brazilian. She was born in Brazil. She's now American, but she is somebody who loves watching soccer. And I absolutely
wait, football or soccer?
Right. She'll say, for we had that argument too. You know, I refuse to call it anything but soccer, just being, you know, stubborn. But to watch it, because you see nothing but these men, you know, complaining and flopping around and doing all these otherwise what I would say unmasculine things. And in fighting, you know, it's the one real sport nowadays where none of that is going to help you win. You know, so I would say when you look at masculinity, you know, fighting nowadays is probably the most masculine, only because the regulations don't really allow you to succeed by being anything other but masculine when you do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what do you think about technology? Is it making men into wussies, or can they still be masculine and be really plugged in?
You know, it's me asking those men, like I said before, you know, who are you with? Who are your brothers? Who are you spending time with? Now, you know, there is we're at the generation where, you know, you do have to have a sort of virtual reality to go along with your actual reality, because so much of what allows us to be successful, you know, is banking on it. But I really think that we need to pay attention to these concepts and these formulas that have served us well in terms of masculinity, have served us well since the beginning, and find ways to apply them to these new realities rather than look at it as a, either or mindset. Because, you know, I have plenty of friends who they still think it's cute to say, oh, well, I don't know how computers work and I don't know how. Well, there's a certain point where you're going to be deemed an idiot, whether you like it or not, because so much of the world is leveraged on what's happening online. It is something that I would consider masculine to look at it as that frontier that needs to be explored and conquered. But we should not, you know, sort of sell and trade in our masculinity, you know, while that's happening. So I think if we look at it proactively and we, you know, we stay true to what masculine roots are, I don't think that, you know, an online presence, you know, needs to emasculate a man. But if they simply look at, you know, their interactions online as the only, you know, model for what a man does, then it's really no mystery why, you know, they have no idea what a man is.
It seems like a lot of little boys nowadays are just inside playing video games or in this virtual reality instead of being outside and building forts or playing cops and robbers like they used to, right?
Yeah, and it's funny. You a very similar situation to the feminist women, you know, dying to go watch the 50 Shades of Grey movie. You also see these little, you know, internet pissant men, challenging other men to violence and, you know, showing all this aggression, this sort of pseudo, sort of simulated testosterone filled persona, you know, and it's all bullshit because, you know, it's not who they are at all, but they can't help but to try and be somebody that they don't even understand why, you know, and it's really, again, this sort of disparity. And if you are somebody who does not exist with a brotherhood, does not exist with that sort of that mirror, that feedback loop of other men, then yeah, you know, you're going to be a little off center. You're going to be, you know, a little sort of confused in what a man is, what masculinity is, and it's really not a mystery why.
Now, have you been paying attention to estrogen mimicking chemicals and how they're also feminizing boys in and outside of the womb?
I have not.
Oh, whoa! I spoke about this.
You're about to piss me off. Yeah. Right now.
Oh, yeah, you should listen to the show I did with Curtis Duncan and then Jack Donovan, and I also touched upon it. But yeah, you have to look out because there's a lot of products that have these estrogen-mimicking chemicals in them, and they're having feminizing effects on boys. You need to look into that, and you need to clean out all those products, especially if you have some young boys in the house.
Yes, you know, and I do recall, because I did listen to the Jack Donovan episode, I do recall you guys talking about this. And, this is probably it being applied, you know, physically. But again, it's really, you know, what is it that's happening to the men of our society and how are they sort of being held accountable for maintaining, you know, their masculinity? And I would argue that even I guess down to, you know, the effects of products that they're consuming, everything is really speaking to, you know, this whole non-gendered society or this non-gendered model. And when we know what masculinity is, it's very easy to tell when we're moving away from it. But it only makes sense.
Yeah, they say that young baby boys are being born with smaller penises now. And a lot of this is because of the estrogen mimicking compounds that the mother's exposed to. And there's a lot of intersex babies being born. So it's kind of freaky.
You know, and it's funny. My wife and I, you know, we're a homeschooling household. So what happens to our children is something we take very seriously. And my children have just incredible eating habits. And admittedly, so much of it is because of my wife's eating habits. But you know, they eat organic food. They and not the, you know, if it's labeled organic, then that's what I'm going to use just because it says organic. But staying away from, you know, fast food, staying away from so many things that are unnatural and sort of just evolved out of convenience and out of a money model, not necessarily a, you know, a quality value model. You know, but most parents nowadays, it's not something they even pay attention to, because they're used to being told what to do, when to do it. And, you know, any move away from that is considered, you know, is mocked, you know, by society at large.
Our parents were total idiots. Some of the things they did, you know, I've gotten mad at my parents for that. What were you thinking? You know,
right, absolutely.
Just so naive. I also read a study from Roper Review that linked high IQ to prenatal exposure of higher levels of testosterone. So it's very important to get those testosterone levels balanced. And a lot of guys are suffering from low testosterone levels, and that's actually what's making them agitated and irritable and not feeling well. So in your classes, do you teach ways to also boost testosterone, or is the class itself boosting the testosterone?
Well, I like to very arrogantly think that just spending time with me is going to increase one's natural testosterone level. Past that, I'd say, you know, there are things that we do masculine with a level of masculinity and things that support, you know, our strengths as men. And aside from, you know, nurturing the aggression, you know, in fight training, you know, weight training is a big part of it. You know, having a sort of sense of who we are physically and taking pride in things like strength and resilience physically is something that's in line and congruent with what testosterone does to the man. And, you know, I say, you know, at the bare minimum, keeping these things as virtuous are sort of maintaining those standards that, you know, we'll be able to understand when we move away from them.
Yeah. Also on the female side of things, high estrogen makes women crazy. So gotta get those levels down. So it's low testosterone, high estrogen, and those are the big problems that a lot of naturopaths are reporting. So it's important to get those things balanced.
Yeah, absolutely. I you know, hear a lot of times, you know, when it comes to weightlifting, when I'm talking to these, you know, Jack Donovan calls them elves, you know, these little, you know, feminine men with their skinny jeans, and, you know, they have this narrative of trying to mock everything that, you know, has always been masculine. Jack Donovan has this great phrase. He calls it a flamboyant dishonor. And it's, you know, it's mocking the things that, you know, men have always held, you know, in high regard. One of them being physical strength. And, you know, I'm often told, oh, you know, you think you're a man because you can lift, you know, heavy weight off the floor. And, you know, I do. I do. I actually do. I think that adds to the resume. Thanks.
Yeah, exactly. Well, last question for you. I wanted to talk about strategies for raising a warrior. I know you did this podcast about it, and you're a father. So how do you do it?
They need to, and oh man, it's a great topic, and one that I would challenge anybody to, you know, to explore further. It's really taking the formula that has worked in the past, under having your child, having your boy understand, you know, where they are in the sort of chain of legacy, you know, having them understand that, you know, they represent a link in a timeline of great men before them. And they're, you know, they're thrust and charged with the responsibility of making sure that their link is just as strong moving forward. Having them understand that in the future, they'll be able to, and they'll be charged with, you know, passing this on to who their children are. And then just embracing through a modeling and through, you know, the embracing of culture, you know, all those things that represent and empower, you know, the masculine mindset. You know, if you're applying, you know, my formula of, you know, pressure to power, it's, you know, you're looking for ways for them to experience that pressure. You're looking for ways for them to understand that adversity is a part of life, and that there is virtue and power in first being resilient to that adversity, and eventually becoming powerful enough to overcome that adversity. It's what men have always done in the past, and it is what will serve men well in the future. It needs to be a conversation that's had consistently with your children and embraced, you know, if not by society, which, you know, we're probably not going to see anytime soon, at least by your home, at least by your household, your group of friends. These things need to be put on the pedestal where they belong.
That's right. Well, Justin, please tell us about your websites, your podcast, and all about your academy.
Oh, absolutely. My webcast is The Pressure Project. That's my podcast. We have thepressureproject.com is our website. I also have the Jungle Gym, Jungle Gym Martial Arts in New York City. And you can go to MMAisforyou.com and you'll find out information there. If you're in New York, by all means, come through. Say you heard about me, or you heard me talk on Radio 314, and you know, well, I know we'll have a good talk, good laugh, and you know, always enjoy meeting like-minded individuals. So those two will do for my websites.
Great. Well, Justin, thank you so much. It's really been a pleasure meeting and speaking with you.
Lon, it's been an absolute pleasure. I enjoyed listening to your podcast now or before. Now, you know, I get to actually listen to myself talk at the same time, which is the best of both worlds.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Take care, Don.
Well, folks, I've said it many times, but European pagans were radical traditionalists. I realize that when I say traditional, people usually think religion, but this is older than that. I'm talking about the original fundamentals of our existence. Tradition comes from the Latin verb tradere, which means to give, to hand in, to transmit directly. Primordial traditionalism means passing down universal principles that through the years have proven the existence of an order in reality. For instance, humanity has discovered that a man and a woman make a baby. It's the natural order of existence. Or it can be natural knowledge of any kind, such as the best time of year to plant a seed. These are classic fundamentals and will last long after liberal ideas die out or reproductive technologies are no longer possible. When Marxists say, what is feminine and masculine anyway, in their gender equality studies, and I hate the Marxist term gender, by the way, because it is a social construct. Rather, I think of it in terms of which sex organ? Your sex is biological, and with that comes hormones that influence what is masculine or feminine. It is biological, not environmental. In addition, hormones help to wire our brains, and men and women are wired differently. High estrogen surges create a female brain. High testosterone surges create a male brain. Male brains appear to be wired front to back, with few connections bridging the two hemispheres. In females, the pathways crisscross between left and right. These differences might explain why men tend to be better at learning and performing a single task, whereas women are more equipped for multitasking, according to the researchers at the Journal Proceeding of the National Academy of Sciences. From Neurobiology, during the intrauterine period, a testosterone surge masculinizes the fetal brain, whereas the absence of such a surge results in a feminine brain. As sexual differentiation of the brain takes place at a much later stage in development than sexual differentiation of the genitals, these two processes can be influenced independently of each other, so it is possible to have a female brain and male parts. And Sweden conducted a study using pheromones on gay and straight people and found that gay men had more of a female brain and gay women had more of a straight male brain. Stanton Jones and Mark Yarhouse stated in 2000 in their book, Homosexuality, the Use of Scientific Research in the Church's Moral Debate. Some researchers propose that human sexual orientation is determined before birth, probably between the second and fifth month of pregnancy. It is during this time that the fetus is exposed to sex hormones, its sexual anatomy develops, and its brain is wired in a manner appropriate to its biological gender, and I would say biological sex. So what I'm saying here is that we are still dealing with biology, which has a powerful hold over us, whether we want to admit it or not. So we're getting hit with gender-bending chemicals on one side, ample studies have proven this, and social conditioning on the other. This is screwing up the male and female natural functioning. And did you know that birth control pills make women prefer less masculine faces? It's because of the high estrogen dose. So think about it. Women are getting high estrogen, preferring feminine males, feminine-looking males, estrogen mimickers in their products, food, birth control, and then men are getting estrogen mimickers and their products too, which is feminizing them. And then pregnant women are exposed to these same chemicals affecting their babies in utero. It's important to note that natural or synthetic hormones can still create these effects. It's all very unnatural and it's all very imbalanced. So as a woman, do I have to be in the kitchen all day and serve my husband to be feminine? No. Femininity can display itself in a variety of ways. Does my husband expect me to cook and clean and know my place? Of course not. I work with him on this website and I have my own business. It's about each couple finding their places according to their skill set. But when I have a child, you bet I will be home nursing that child, making the nest how I want it, and my husband will be providing for us in order for us to have that space. It's about changing life according to the season that you're in. Anyway, thanks for listening to my very long outro. And if you want to help support us, which we do appreciate and need, please sign up for a membership at redicemembers.com for full access to our extensive archives full of a variety of diverse material. Radio314.com is my website for any details you may want. And I have some highly interesting guests coming up, so stay tuned. Have a good night.